Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Reyes, Judge Hooton, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you. Let's all be seated.
Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. As you know, all the hearings today are being live streamed. However, our rules prohibit anyone from making private recordings, so we ask you to respect that. Our first case this morning is A23-0413, in re the estate of Joseph Andre Rees. Hope I pronounced that correctly. As all parties are aware, the counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, just approach the podium. You can adjust it to your level. It does go up and down. And just please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mitzi Malott for the appellate, Jennifer Ide. May it please the court, this case is about a couple that had been together for 11 years and were married for 4 months. The decedent had been battling cancer the entire time that they were together, and appellant had been the person to care for him and be with him during that time. They had a long history together. There are two issues before the court today. The first issue is whether the court erred when it denied Jennifer Ide's claim to her husband's 2017 Ford F-350 truck as exempt property under Minnesota Statute 524.2-403A2. The district court made an error of law for which the standard of review is de novo. For this issue, there are no questions of fact. There is no dispute that the appellate is entitled to exempt property under the statute. There is no dispute that the appellate is entitled to one vehicle from decedent's estate. There is no dispute that the title to the Volkswagen Jetta was transferred by the decedent into joint ownership with his wife days before his death. There is no dispute that a vehicle registration card was issued on March 24th, 2021 by the North Dakota Department of Transportation Motor Vehicle Division listing Mr. Rees and Jennifer Ide as the owners of the vehicle.
I'm sorry, is that the Jetta or the
Jetta.
Ford? Yep, got it.
There's no dispute that immediately upon the death of Mr. Rees, Jennifer Ide became the sole surviving owner. And there's no dispute that at the time of his death, decedent had one vehicle in his name, and that was the truck. The analysis for this is simple. The statute clearly and unambiguously states that the surviving spouse is entitled to, from the estate, one automobile without regard to value. Or to put it more simply, Jennifer Ide is entitled to the Ford truck. That is the only vehicle in the estate. The district court found that the
And that's independent of the whole issue of the admitted spouse rule, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
And the two aren't linked together. They're two separate considerations.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
The district court found that the decedent intended to, that appellant was supposed to have the Jetta as the vehicle under the statute. However, what he intended is immaterial in this situation. The statute doesn't allow for any judicial discretion in this matter. The statute just says that the spouse is entitled to one vehicle. It doesn't say unless the decedent intended her to have a different vehicle or if she doesn't need it or if she has other vehicles. It says she's entitled to one vehicle. It also doesn't say that she's entitled to a vehicle only if she has possession of it. And it doesn't say she's entitled to a vehicle unless the decedent intended the vehicle to be sold to pay for his mother's siding. So the statute says she's entitled to one vehicle. There are no qualifiers, and it is an absolute right.
And just to be clear, that the issue with respect to the vehicle is separate and distinct also from the $15,000 for other personal property?
That's correct.
Okay.
She's entitled per statute to the $15,000 and the vehicle, both. So the case law is well established, so much so that the probate court doesn't even need to issue an order awarding it to her. It is just her right to have it. The only time the probate court deals with exempt property is when the personal representative refuses to turn it over. The second issue before the court is whether or not the district court erred when it determined the appellate was not an omitted spouse under Minnesota Statute 524.3-301. The statute states that a surviving spouse who marries the testator after they're married is entitled to the estate, the share of the estate, as if he had died intestate, unless one of the four exceptions can be met. So,
and the one that I think we're all agreeing that applies here is 524.2-301 paren 4, right?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. So,
if we think that the intent was only to give her the IRA, then the only thing, and if you are correct on the truck, then the only thing she doesn't get is the 15 grand for the other personal property. Would that be a fair statement?
No.
Okay, why?
Well, the 15,000 is a non-issue. The district court found that she was awarded that under the exempt property statute. So
she gets that in a, so I want to make sure this is clear. I had some, speaking for myself only, when I looked at the order, I thought the gist was, the intent was to omit her, and that she only gets the 15, the whatever 88 grand in the IRA, and then, in looking at the order, it's kind of like, well, I'm going to give her something anyway, and I have to admit I didn't really get that. I mean, either you're an admitted spouse, or you're not. Either the intent is clear or not, and then if the intent is clear, you're out. And if the intent is not clear, you're in.
Okay.
And he seemed to, the judge seemed to like do a little bit of both, which I think is the one thing you're not allowed to do under the statute.
So
do you, first of all, do you think the order is, well, I know you think it's wrong, but it seems like the gist of the order is that there was an intent to have her only get the 89 grand in the IRA from the outside evidence.
No, I don't think that's
okay.
That's it. So, and what you explained is exactly my issue. So thank you for doing that. So let's there's two separate areas. So first of all, we have the exempt property, which is the 15,000 and the truck. So then that's awarded, let's say, under that statute. Now let's go over to the admitted spouse part, where it says that he provided for her because he put her as a beneficiary on the IRA, right? And had it stopped there, the order stopped there, then she wouldn't qualify, but it didn't. And that's where the problem lies. The problem lies that the court found that he did intend her to have additional property. what's not clear, because part of the additional property that I believe, well, I'm guessing, but to start with, is when he had his consultation with his attorney, he understood that when they got married, his spouse was going to get additional property under the statutes. So he knew that was going to happen. So the minute he married her, he knew she was going to get more.
And just to be clear, the two item, at least two pieces of personal property that she would get under the statute, from what I understand you're arguing, is one, the $15,000 for personal property, which is not disputed in terms of, that's not being challenged on appeal by either party, correct?
No.
So that's not in dispute.
No.
And then she would be entitled to select a truck.
Right.
Is what I understand your argument to be. So those would be two items that once they were married, she would be entitled to, correct?
Correct, under the statute. But I am not, those two items to me are not the issue under the omitted spouse, because those are already there. So under omitted spouse.
What do you mean that they're already there? They weren't there until they married.
Right. So she already received those because they were married.
Right.
But also she would be.
Isn't that what his attorney advised him, is once you are married, then she will be entitled to more than just the $89,000 for the IRA, correct?
Well, that's what I'm assuming he advised him, because he advised him, North Dakota does have the probate code, and some of the things are a bit different, but he advised him under North Dakota law. But basically, she's also entitled to part of an augmented estate, which we didn't discuss because of the marriage. So.
Right, but I want to go back to the statute and the particular mm-hmm. language. Is it your position that the statute 524-2-301A4 is that is plain and unambiguous, the language there?
It is plain and unambiguous.
Okay, and the way it reads, and I'm going to read out loud because I want to parse it out because I think it's important. It says, the testator, that overall it says that the testator married shall receive a share unless, and subsection 4 says, unless the testator provided for the spouse by transfer outside the will, and I don't think that's contested because she did receive something outside the will, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that part at least is not, but I think what's at issue is the remaining part, and it says, and the intent that the transfer be in lieu of a testamentary provision is shown by the testator's written statements or may be reasonably inferred from the amount of the transfer or other evidence.
Right.
So there are three ways intent right. can be shown, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Good. And in this case, we only have other evidence because the court found the other two were not sufficient.
All right.
On their own.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, on their own, and finding number 32, the district court said that evidence regarding the retirement account persuasive but not necessarily determinative.
Mm-hmm.
But then it said that, and this is an appellant's addendum 50, given the short-term nature of the marriage, lack of contribution by I to the assets of the state outside of the homestead, and then here's the key parts, I think. The statements and clearly expressed intent of the decedent, that seems to go to the other evidence, in other words, the testimony from decedent's attorney, along with the value of the retirement account provided for Ide's benefit as compared to the value of the estate. And that's the whether the intent can be inferred from the amount of the transfer. And then the district court concludes that the court finds that the decedent provided for Ide outside of the will, but also expected that she would receive some additional property if they were to marry. That seems to fit, it seems like the district court is saying at least two, if not three, of those provisions that are in the or form alternative are met. One by itself is not enough, but having two or three together does meet that statute.
But by the mere fact that he intended her to have more means that he did not provide for her outside the way. You can't, in my opinion, again, is that because it didn't meet the requirement on its own and had the additional, but she was to get more, that exception fails.
But why wouldn't the more, the additional property, be the $15,000 and the one vehicle? Because she wasn't going to get that unless they married, and it does, and the court did find that she would receive some additional property if they were to marry.
Right. Because we don't know what he intended her to have besides that.
Well, then that sounds like a factual issue, doesn't it? I mean, you keep saying it's a legal issue, but that's the factual finding, is that there was intent by the decedent to provide for your client outside of the will. So that's the finding of fact here. And it doesn't sound like you're contesting that, but you're saying that it's a matter of law. Why would it be a matter of law?
Because the exception isn't met, because he intended to provide her more. That fails on the exception.
But he was advised throughout all of these proceedings, once you marry, you're going to get more property. Why is the judge's finding of additional property just simply the fact that she's going to get additional property by virtue of being married?
Because if he intended to provide her more, then he did not provide for her outside of the will. Because there was the intention for more. That means that the retirement account, which had already been done, wasn't enough. So he intended for her to get more, so that exception fails because he intended her to get more. So I guess I realize it sounds circular, but what I'm trying to get at, I know, and I understand that.
I wish I can explain better. And you're turning it into a fact issue.
It's not a fact issue.
Because the court found, you don't dispute that she got additional property by virtue of her marriage, correct? In other words, the $15,000 plus.
No, I don't dispute that.
All right, so that's additional property right there by virtue of the marriage. Why? But you're saying it should be even more than that.
Because according to the statute, if he didn't provide for her by under that exception, then the will is not valid. Or the will, she takes it as if he didn't have a will. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying because she didn't, the exception fails because it wasn't complete, I guess is what I'm trying to get at, is that it says that on its own, the beneficiary designation that he did was not enough. There needed to be more. So that in itself.
But why, following up on Judge Hooten's excellent question, you know, I will just say 36, you know, is a little confusing to me, but you know, that's just me. Why would we not read but also expected she would receive some additional property if they were to marry the way Judge Hooten is suggesting, which is the truck and the 15 grand as opposed to, you know, the statutory third of the estate. Or whatever the statutory, whatever amount she would get as a minute spouse. Because then, you know, then I think you might be able to reconcile 36 with one, petitioner's petition to be treated as an admitted spouse is denied. And I think your position is you can't, you know, right?
Because it doesn't meet the exception.
Yeah. No,
so
that's my position.
I understand all the arguments.
Could I ask, because I didn't see it in the brief, so how much money are we talking about here?
Well,
I mean, we know there's $120,000 for the truck, but how much? $120,000, I should say. But So how much more money is there involved here?
Well, the final account, I think, said something like $300,000. Okay. So it's a little unclear.
Okay, so, all right.
Excluding the IRA. So $300,000 in addition to the IRA. And under the admitted spouse rule, let's say it is $300,000. What, approximately what amount would she get of that?
The first $225,000.
All right. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. My name is James Hess. I'm here representing the respondent, Jessica Reese, in her role as personal representative of the estate. As the court is aware, there are two different issues here. One is the omitted spouse treatment, and the other one is the award of exempt property. I'll be brief on the facts, but I do think it's important.
Which is the truck and the 15 grand?
The assertion of the truck as opposed to the VW and the $15,000, right. Personal property or okay. Cash.
So just so that I know where I'm interrupting you is just as you're up to bat, but so... If we find that she doesn't meet the requirements for admitted spouse, that is really separate from the issue of the truck and the 15 grand, right?
Agreed, yes.
Okay, fine. But your position is she shouldn't get the there was no error as to admitted spouse, and she doesn't get the truck, and she doesn't get the 15 grand either.
No, we agree that she gets the 15,000.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. Thank you. Go ahead. So... Explain why she doesn't get the truck again?
Because she got one vehicle already. The exempt statute says that she gets two things. One is either personal property totaling $15,000 or cash,
yep.
And the other is, quote, one automobile, end quote. The court, in the trial court order, said, we're going to award you $15,000. You have the VW from the estate. Therefore, your award of exempt property is thus satisfied.
Even though she already owned the Jetta?
I don't think that she owned the Jetta. I think what you have to do is
If my wife and I both have joint, or both our names are in their certificate, I mean, she owns it, right? I mean, I can't sell it without her permission, right?
In this case, it says or.
Okay. What says or?
The certificate of title issued after death says Joseph Reese or, and I'm Ms. Hyde, that both of them appear, but the word or is
well,
there.
I mean, doesn't that make her case stronger?
No, I think it makes it weaker.
Why?
Because what we have to do in this case is to look at whether or not she owned that vehicle prior to his death or only acquired at death. And so what we have to really ask ourselves is, was that an inter vivos gift, or did it occur only as a result of his death? When we look at the gift law that I cited for the court in my brief, it says that to qualify as an inter vivos gift, the gift must be complete and delivered and no right of recall. Here, when we look at the title, it says Joseph Reese or. He therefore could have sold that vehicle prior to his death, and she only obtains full and complete rights to that title upon his death.
So if she obtains full rights to that vehicle upon his death.
Yes.
How does that satisfy the surviving spouse one automobile selection clause?
Because she received it as a result of his death. I think the question on this issue is...
let me ask you this question. Was that, at that point, at his death, did it become a part of his estate, or did she obtain it directly?
I believe it's a part of his estate.
How is it part of his estate if she has her name on the title, because it's four, and she now owns it as of his death?
Give me one second, because we're off on a different spot than I expected this soon, but...
Usually happens up here. We're very erratic.
We know that up to the time of his death, he could have sold that vehicle because it says
so
or.
And she could have too, right?
She could have too, yes.
Okay.
But what you're looking at here is the question of whether property that was jointly owned cannot count as exempt property, right? The assumption by the appellant is that it cannot count. I don't see any case law saying that. I have looked. I do not see either case law saying that it does count or case law saying that it doesn't count. And you get to double dip. You get two automobiles in this particular context. I haven't found a case saying either one of those things.
So to follow up on Judge Connolly's example, so any vehicles that are in the name of both me and my wife, the name of my wife and I,
mm-hmm.
Become part of the state even though it's in both of our names.
Yes.
Upon my death.
Yes. And I'll tell you why.
Okay. Please do.
Minnesota statute section.
I want to know if I need to change title to my vehicle.
Yeah, really, that's the first thing I'm doing when I get home tonight.
Well, you might want to do that anyway. Minnesota statute section 524.1.201 sub 18 defines estate. And I'll read the whole thing first. It says, the estate includes all of the property of the decedent, trust, or other person whose affairs are subject to this chapter as originally constituted and as it exists from time to time during administration. So when we read that language, we know we're not dealing with a trust. We know we're not dealing with other person. So if we take those things out, it would say, all property of the decedent whose affairs are subject to this chapter. There's an additional thing that generally has to be done with jointly owned property. If you have a transfer on death deed, you got to go file an affidavit of survivorship and a certified copy of the death certificate. Same thing with joint tenant property, right? If you got a vehicle that's jointly owned, you got to go file a death certificate there. So that definition in 524.1.201 sub 18, in my opinion, says that jointly owned property is also a part of the estate.
So
they're trying to make a distinction between non-probate assets, in other words, what needs the court direction or order to transfer, and what property is a part of the estate which does not need that. They're trying to say that because it is in the estate but non-probate property, it therefore can't count as exempt property, and I don't see any support for that.
Well, is it your position that if it's or, in order for her to, get sole title to the Jetta, she has to provide a death certificate to the DMV?
No, but she would have to deal with the claim of him, right? He owned that vehicle for several years prior to this. And so if she was going to say that it is automatically mine, he could say, you know what, you were just on that for the purposes of avoiding probate on that particular estate, I'm sorry, on probate on that particular asset. And so therefore, it was my car, you took it, you owe me money.
But it didn't come from, I mean, the statute says it you have to look at what came from the estate.
Yes.
And this was independent of the estate.
I don't think so. I think the administration of it is separate from the estate, but I don't think that the asset is not part of the estate, and I'm looking at that definition
But his interest extinguished. I mean, if they're joint owners, his interest extinguished.
At the time of his death.
So how does that become a part of the estate?
I think the definition does that for us. It says all property as originally constituted.
But to Judge Connolly's point, if it's an or, it's not and. It's not really true joint property in the sense that both parties have to sign off. For instance, if they wanted to sell it, I think you would acknowledge that if he wanted to sell it on his own, he could have. And
yes.
Conversely, she could have sold it on her own if she wanted to.
I think that's fair, yes.
I'm still struggling with once he died, she's the sole owner of it.
Right. and a non-probate administration, but that doesn't mean that it's not a part of his estate. It was part of his property up to the time of his death, and therefore, looking at that definition, I believe everything is a part of the estate. Some of it may be non-probate.
Can you cite any case law in support of that proposition?
No, I can't. I can't find any that says that it can count as exempt property, and I can't find any that cannot.
Okay.
Pursuant to Judge Hooten's request, question about how much is involved here, we're talking about an automobile. I don't think normally you're going to get a trial automobile. I sure don't think you're going to get an appeal regarding the value of an automobile. We just don't see the case law out there.
It's not an automobile. It's a truck, though. That's, and we're in Minnesota, and those are so important. Well, I'm just kidding. I appreciate your candor in terms of case law because it. Thank you.
So it was his property up to the time of death, and that makes it a part of his estate as originally constituted. The trial court found that she got her one automobile as required by the exempt statute. She didn't have the title, actually, at that time. It wasn't even issued yet. She didn't have the title. She didn't have the vehicle. It could have been recalled. Therefore, the gift wasn't complete. It is a part of his estate.
Mr. Hess, what's your, shifting gears a little, what's your best argument that she doesn't comply, or she doesn't satisfy the requirements of the admitted spouse issue? Is it just, it seems like the overwhelming evidence is, you know, the IRA is for you, you know, because of all you've done, but then everything else is for mom because she's got her health issues. Is that sort of the bottom line here?
It's uncontested that that is what his intent was. Earlier, there was some discussion with the attorney for the appellant regarding the intent and whether the intent was satisfied. But let's take a look at that exception, subdivision 4 of 524.301. It says that you make a transfer and, quote, the intent that the transfer be in lieu of a testamentary provision, end quote. It doesn't talk about sufficiency. It doesn't talk about comparing it to the spousal share of the augmented estate, which, it, by the way, in this case would be zero because of the length of the marriage. It just says that is your intent, that it be done outside of the will. That's all that's required. That's what the statute says. Aspenson tells us the focus is on whether the testator considered the relationship between his will and his marriage. And in this case, it is uncontested that he did. He specifically talked with his attorney about that. The appellant in this case knew of the terms of the will when she got married. It wasn't contested. There's no dispute about it at all. That was his intent, that it be in lieu of a testamentary provision. Aspenson tells us which evidence we can consider, and it talks also about the sufficiency, and it asks whether he considered the relationship between the will and the marriage. In this particular case, he didn't forget her. There's no evidence to suggest that he did. He, in fact, talked with her, the opposite. The time here was short. We're talking about a marriage occurring less than 1 month later and only lasting 4 months.
But how long was she with him before the marriage?
11 years, but that has no impact at all on this particular statute. If she's not a spouse, she gets nothing.
Oh, I get it, I get
so
it.
So we're looking just at the period of the marriage, which is 4 months. His consideration of the marriage at the time he did his will is uncontested. Let's look at the sufficiency analysis. The marriage was for 3 months and change. She knew about the terms when she got married. She knew that everything was going to be given to Jessica Reese for the care of their mother. The sufficiency then asks whether $88,000 plus the exempt property of $15,000 in one automobile, in other words, somewhere at least around $100,000 is sufficient for a four-month marriage.
Well, can I ask you this about the finding of the court? I mean, he said he found that the decedent provided for for Ide outside of the will, but also expected that she would receive some additional property if they were to marry.
Yes.
Now, that could mean additional property during the course of the marriage. It could mean the exempt property by law that she would get. Doesn't that create some ambiguity as to what the court's finding would include?
No. It may create ambiguity. I shouldn't say no.
Because it's not clear.
But I will say that the analysis of it is confused. Because when we talk about the intent, we go back to Aspenson, which says that, we go back to the statute. And the statute doesn't say you got to completely follow through on everything. The intent merely says that whatever it is you transfer is a non-testamentary deal. That's all that is required. That's it.
But couldn't the same argument be made vis-a-vis this the Jetta that he intended this to be a transfer of additional property, understanding that there would be an exempt? The court didn't clarify that, but wouldn't that intent have to be honored by this court if there is, in effect, a finding that that was his intent?
Yeah, but I think you have to be careful about conflating making sure that the intent is satisfied and then excluding it from exempt property. There's no case law suggesting that they must be mutually exclusive.
I know, but, I mean, if he intended to give her that car, understanding that there would be an addition to that, her exempted property upon his death.
I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that was his intent, to say also that it was going to be additional property. Remember that he went to a North Dakota attorney.
But truthfully, though, if he intended it to be the exempt property, he didn't have to do anything. She could pick.
I'm not understanding your question. I'm sorry.
In other words, it operates by law that she gets to pick which vehicle. Why would he need to do anything?
The fact that he may have been confused doesn't, in my opinion, change the analysis. Remember that he believed he was a North Dakota resident, and he went to a North Dakota attorney regarding what would happen under North Dakota law. And so if he was confused on that, I don't think that it changes the application.
Well, there's no evidence that he was. I mean, there's nothing in this record that said he was confused.
Sure. If you look at the one particular finding of fact made by the court, it says his intent was to give her that and something else, but she doesn't know what. Well, there's no suggestion that he knew what. There's no evidence. This is an evidentiary, factual finding issue.
There was evidence in the record that he knew that she would be entitled to some exempt property.
That is the finding of the... Well, no, it didn't say exempt property. It said something else.
Actually, it said some additional property.
Thank you.
So your position would be, to solve my problem, which is, 36 seems a little confusing, is... I've got to read 36 in conjunction with the rest of the order. And that's how it all fits apart. She's omitted spouse, but she's getting the the IRA, and the $15,000. And the $15,000 is sort of the additional property. And then maybe he doesn't really sort of talk about the Jetta in the order, but maybe that's what it is. And then we could read it all up. Then we could read it all together and affirm, in your mind.
Yes.
Okay, I got it.
Could I?
Yes, go right ahead.
Just one more question. The retirement account wasn't part of the estate, was it?
Well, it depends. I think that if you look at the definition of estate that I provided earlier, I think that it would be a part of the estate. Now, it is what we consider to be a non-probate part of the estate.
That's just wrong. I mean,
the whole point of these things is when you're a beneficiary of, this, of the IRA or the stock account, then it goes directly to that person no matter what the will says. So I
agree with that part. But I don't think that that excludes it from being a part of the estate. It's a non-probate part of the estate, but that doesn't mean that it's not a part of the estate.
You pay taxes on it?
When they're on...
On the IRA, do you pay, would you, under your analysis, would you pay probate taxes on the IRA?
I don't think there's such a thing as a probate tax.
Well, estate tax.
In this particular case, no, you wouldn't, because it isn't going to reach the threshold of estate taxation.
Well, my hunch is... You know, the IRS is pretty clear in wanting to get the money. So if it's if it's separate, it's you're not paying the estate tax. Therefore, I don't think you're paying. It's part of the estate. But anyway, I think you had another question.
Actually, let me, if you don't mind, could I just address that point?
Yes.
Because the reason in our standard probate forms, you disclose here's the total estate. On the left hand side, you say these are the probate assets, and you got a total. And on the right-hand side, you got these are the non-probate assets, and you got a total. That's because those non-probate assets are included in the calculation of whether or not estate tax is payable. You have to disclose it. It is still a part of the estate.
But isn't the whole essence of the statute, or could I ask the question?
Go right ahead, Judge, please.
The whole essence of the statute is what is she entitled to under this will?
I'm sorry, which statute do you mean?
I mean 524.2-403.
So the exempt property statute.
Well, the exempt property and also the other one. The
omitted spouse?
The omitted spouse. I mean, isn't the whole essence of it what is she entitled to under this will?
No. No, the exempt property is awarded in an intestate manner. It doesn't even matter if I say all my stuff goes to my buddy Bob, and if I were married, my wife would still get the exempt property. It isn't
on
simply...
The other, on the other statute, though, it's what isn't the essence what she's entitled to under the will? I mean...
No.
Is she omitted or not? I mean...
Well, none of it would apply if she were named, so she must be omitted. And then we look at, okay, essentially... What was his intent? Did he forget about the wife, or did he make non-testamentary transfers? Here, we know he made non-testamentary transfers. We look at the Aspison case. It tells us, consider the following things. You know, what was the intent? What was the amount? Did the spouse share anything? In this case, the spouse shared absolutely nothing out of the four-month marriage and wants to be treated as an omitted spouse, which would mean she would get every single penny he ever had. That's not the intent of the party. And Aspenson tells us, as well as the statute, it is the intent of the party, the decedent, provided that he made non-testamentary allocations for the spouse, you're good. So I think that, I see my time is up, and I don't mean to cut off any further questions, but the intent of the decedent, pursuant to Judge Hooten's comments earlier, is a factual finding. Factual findings are reversed or dealt with only if there is a clearly erroneous finding. Here, the description of the intent might have been a little sloppy in the order, but clearly the finding was that he was going to make non-testamentary transfers to her. That's all that the statute requires.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. Ms. Mallett, you'll have the last word.
Okay, so I'm just going to clear up a couple things. I think that the augmented estate is more than zero, short-term or not. There was a time I could have sworn to that, but not anymore. That ship has sailed. So as I recall, I do believe it is more than zero. When we talk about the decedent's intent regarding the omitted spouse statute, I think it's important to consider that he did intend to take care of his mother and provide for his mother, but he also intended to provide for a spouse. His mother passed away very shortly after he did. So the option even to take care of his mother isn't on the table.
But that's neither here nor
there.
It
isn't. It was just...
And I want to focus on, I believe I asked you earlier, looking at the omitted spouse statute, subsection 4, it begins, quote, the testator provided for the spouse by transfer outside the will. I believe I asked you that, you're not arguing that that hasn't been met. In other words, he did provide for her by transferring outside of the will in the form of the $88,000 IRA, correct?
He did.
Okay.
He did
make her beneficiary. That is not contested, correct?
Correct.
So that part of the statute is met. Then it's just whether the intent portion, and there are at least three ways, and they're in the disjunctive, any one of those or all of those could be met here then, correct? And if any of those are met, then she is not considered an omitted spouse. Correct?
No, I think that is met, but that wasn't his intent. That wasn't his only intent. He intended to provide for additionally for her. So if he intended to provide additionally for her.
But that's not what the statute says, though. The statute just says, and that's already covered by the first part, the testator provided for the spouse by transfer outside of the will. So if he intended to provide for her outside of the will, that has already been met from the IRA.
But that wasn't how the complete provision. It's only partial.
Correct. So, it has two parts. That part has to be met, and then the intent part has to be met. But under paragraph 36 of the district court's order, it appears that the district court is saying that is those three provisions, those three alternative ways to show intent are in fact met by other evidence, by the record of the decedent's lawyer, the testimony of explaining his intent, of the amount of the transfer outside of the will, and in other words, the value of the retirement account provided for, and the fact that he did in fact provide outside of the will. So why isn't that provision met, which means she would not be considered an omitted spouse?
Because there is no finding that what was provided was adequate.
But the district court said the value of the retirement account provided for Ide's benefit as compared to the value of the estate. So the district court did provide that balancing act of, under the statute, may be reasonably inferred from the amount of transfer. So the district court looked at the amount of transfer to the IRA and the amount of value in the estate and said, yeah, it's pretty clear that he intended that to be sufficient for her. In addition to the other, she's going to get a car, she's going to get $15,000.
What's missing is he intended to provide her additional property, but it doesn't say, and this and this is sufficient to satisfy that. There is no finding or no fact that says that.
Why do we need that when we already have other evidence in the form of the testimony? All you need is one of those three. And the discord said, looking at whether it can be reasonably inferred from the amount of the transfer, the discord explicitly addressed that, or if there's other evidence and the discord explicitly addressed that. Why isn't that enough? Why do we even care then about whether or not the discord explicitly addressed other income that or other monies that she would get?
Because by not doing that, in my opinion, again, defeats this. It does not satisify this because
why aren't the other two are satisfied? Why isn't that enough? All you need is one. It's in the disjunctive.
Because she found that the amount was persuasive but not determinative, And she said there was additional, he intended her to have additional property.
Right, but that's, the district court went through, and that's an earlier paragraph where the district court said, that's persuasive, but that's not enough. But then it analyzed the other factors and said, you know what, looking at the big picture here, that's not enough, that doesn't get her over the hump. But, you know what, in addition to that, looking at the value of what she got outside of the will compared to the estate, I think that's sufficient. So it's not, the district court could have just relied on one, but the district court didn't. It actually relied on several.
But she never found that it was sufficient. All she found is that he expected her to have more. Right, but it never finished. It just, he expects her to have more. So if he expects her to have more, then we don't, again, we don't know what that was. So how do we know if, what if he expected her to have the intestate share? We don't know what he expected, so therefore it's not sufficient.
Well, it we do know that he didn't intend, I mean, he intended, when he did this will, he did not intend to make her a beneficiary under the will because he said, I mean, he knew that he had already signed, he'd already signed over the retirement account to her.
Right.
And during the course of the marriage, he signed over that car.
They weren't married and weren't certain they were getting married at the time he did the will. I mean, I realized that it was a short time later, but
he knew. When he knew they were thinking about marriage then. Right. So the intent was she not be a part of that will. So by you saying we shouldn't honor the will, you're asking us to ignore his intent, right?
No, not necessarily. We, again, don't know what his intent was at the time. We don't know if he intended her to have more. We don't know if he intended to have her a beneficiary on his life insurance policy. We don't really know what he intended other than he intended to have more. She intended, she was supposed to get more, right? That's what we know. He wanted her to get more.
So you're really arguing how much more?
Basically, what I'm really arguing is because of that, because he intended her to get more, that exception fails. That's what I'm arguing.
Thank you, Ms. Mallett.
Thank you.
The matter is submitted. We will issue our decision within 90 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.